We hear it all the time. Children are our future. Like any cliche that's worn, we say it and don't think about what it really means. The world we are leaving for those children is going to lead most of those kids to wonder what exactly we did mean. We aren't saving money for their education, the price for which is rising so fast few will be able to afford one. We aren't saving money for our own retirement, which means there will be little for us to leave behind. We are utterly irresponsible stewards of our environment. Our inability to pay for or unwillingness to pay for public schools means they won't get the education they need. We don't have the resources to intervene when someone tries to harm them. Man, someone just shoot me. And it's election season. Candidates are spending a lot of money attacking each other. They're talking about old folks' issues, about the economy, about health care, but they aren't talking about our children. They aren't talking about what happens when a society turns its back on its children. Well, when those kids grow up to turn their backs on society, we really shouldn't be surprised. So don't ask me. Let's ask some experts. Tonight, I am proud to welcome two hard-charging advocates whose work put them on the side squarely of the children. I'm Alan Jennings, and I, by day, most nights, and for that matter, every weekend, am the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, but once, sometimes twice, maybe even three times a month, WDIY is kind enough or crazy enough to give me this microphone to talk about the public affairs issues of our time, those issues that I think are pressing. And I don't think there's anything more pressing than our society turning its back on our children. This is election season, and I have every intention of talking about these issues in the context of the election. This is a nonprofit organization, and I work for a nonprofit, and my guests work for nonprofits, so we're not going to endorse any candidates, but we can certainly talk freely about the facts that involve the public policy issues affecting children. My guests, first, are Marcy Ronald, who is the Vice President for Community Impact at the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. Marcy, thanks for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
And Greg Dowdy, who is the Executive Director of the Children's Home of Easton. Greg's got extensive background working with children. He taught for 20 years. He's run a couple of different agencies serving children. And he's also the Chair of the Public Policy Committee for the Pennsylvania Council for Children, Youth, and Family Service. Greg Dowdy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Alan. I appreciate it.
I can already tell you're not from around here, are you?
No, I'm from New England, thus the Boston accent.
Yes. Well, welcome anyway. Let's start with what your respective organizations do. I mean, I think everybody understands what the United Way does. You go out and shake people down for money, which is a good thing.
Alan. Well.
But you give that money away.
You know, we used to be the community chest, and so, you know, the dollars flowed into our organization, and then they were allocated out, and over the last several years, our organization has undergone significant transformation to really being an agent for change, so investing those dollars into high-quality programs and services that make an impact in our community, as opposed to just being the community bucket.
So children, in the context of the United Way, you have some strategic initiatives involving a variety of special constituencies, one of which is children.
We have an almost $4 million investment in education across the Lehigh Valley. And so, and really looking at sort of a birth to graduation pathway. So we invest in programs and services that help kids to be born healthy and to help them on the path towards school readiness. Programs and services that help with helping kids to stay in school and to graduate on time. And then programs that help families, to stabilize families. So we invest in your more traditional programs, but we also invest in systems change work, both through our community schools and also a Promise Neighborhood Initiative in Allentown. So we have a pretty big stake in the ground in children here in the Lehigh Valley.
And Greg Dowdy, I can't imagine doing what you do. I honestly can't. You know, somebody recently made a pretty insightful comment and said to me that the further you get from the real work, the more money you make. So, you know, us executive directors, you know, don't deal with the real, like, in the trenches kind of stuff, but we certainly see it. We walk past it. Right. We talk to the people who do. We bleed for those people.
Yeah.
What does the Easton Children's Home, what does it do?
Well, it's an organization that's been around since 1885, and I'm really very fortunate because I get to see kids every day and work with kids every day. And, you know, about 2 hours ago, a young man of ours at the Children's Home and I were having a conversation about decisions that he was making and so forth. And it's rewarding work. It's great work. Basically, the Children's Home of Easton has been providing a home, a nurturing environment, a safe place to be for children who, for one reason or another, can't live at home right now. And that might be issues in their community. That might be issues in their home. It might be things and decisions that they've made. But for whatever reason, they are living with us right now, and we're providing that home environment for them.
And what is a child by your definition?
Well, and that's a good question, because when we talk about children's issues, very often people immediately think about pre-adolescence, adolescence, and so forth. But, you know, when we're looking at today's society, and you talked about the children coming out of college right now, or going to college and not being able to afford that, we're talking about young adults now as well in this context. And, you know, we need to consider not just children, but those young adults too that are making a transition to adulthood.
So do you have an age range that you're able to serve?
We actually work with youth right up through, I think the oldest one we're working with right now is 22 years of age, because we're fortunate to have had people that had the foresight to start some funds that allow us to support them when they go on to higher education, trade school, and so forth. So we've been really fortunate to have, you know, strong supporters who said this is worthwhile and we need to support this.
David Gilgoff, who runs Valley Youth House, which is a shelter for runaway teens, basically runaway and throwaway teens. David, you know, I remember once saying that when Valley Youth House was established in the 70s, it was really a lot of kids whose parents found pot in their sock drawer, and, you know, the kids, you know, took off. And that it's not that way anymore, that they are much more complicated, their situations, they're much more threatening, they're much more dangerous, they're much more just horrible situations. Is that your experience at the Children's Home?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's not so much the children as the challenges that the children face in today's society. They are hit with things that we never had to deal with as a youth. In fact, my daughter, unfortunately, she's an adult now and on her own. But the kids that we're seeing today are dealing with issues that she didn't have to deal with even 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So I think it's become more complex. I think it's become a more dangerous society that children are growing up in. You know, we need to respond to that, and we need to attend to that.
The concept of a throwaway kid, you know, I mean, runaway I get.
Right.
I mean, you know, I probably may have run away, but I can't remember. but the throwaway child, I don't get that.
I've seen it throughout my career. I spent 20 years in public education prior to moving into the nonprofit arena and going to work as an executive director, first deputy director, and then executive director of a children's home in Maine. And I saw throwaway children as early as kindergarten, children that would come in to register for school. And unfortunately, I can say I saw professionals that say, well, that child's never going to amount to such much because he's from such and such a family. And that's an attitude that, you know, is abhorrent, because every child has tremendous potential. Even children who have made bad decisions can turn those decisions around. So that happens, unfortunately, that we do tend to throw away children.
Marcy, you said that you're, what did you say, 40% of the funding that you're spending each year has gone to investments for children?
Actually, 70% of our undesignated pie goes into education. And
okay.
So we have a pretty pretty significant investment in that, and specifically a pretty hefty investment in early childhood education. So knowing that, you know, if we really want to change the game in this community, we have to have an investment in early childhood education. And so,
so what are you funding?
Programs that do early learning. So, childcare programs, programs that educate moms, programs that help with teen moms in our community. And so you sort of get it at, you know, both ends, you know, the support for the baby as well as, you know, helping that teen to stay in school, to not give up on their life. You know, I was thinking as Greg was talking, you know, so much of why I eventually joined the United Way team is, you know, thinking about, you know, my previous career, and was going into and working in doing a little bit of prevention ed work in maximum security juvenile facilities. And there's just nothing like seeing the eyes of an 11-year-old that are already dead, and thinking, you know, they're in a broken system, they're going back into a broken system, they came from a broken system. How are we going to address this issue? You know, how are we going to prevent this from happening? And it can be really overwhelming when you know, as somebody who cares so deeply about social justice and thinking about how, you know, you know, are we, you know, sending them on down into the adult system, and knowing and wondering if there's any hope at all. And so knowing that, you know, we're investing in some programs and services that start so early, and yet the need continues to grow. You know, we have so many kids who are coming into our schools who are not ready. They're already behind the starting line from their peers, from their wealthier peers. And so how can we help to close that gap before they even get there? And then what do we do to keep on the game so that they're keeping up with their peers?
You know, that's a great point, Mossy, and you're absolutely right. The eyes tell it all. And people ask me often, how do you know that you're getting through to a child? And you can see it in the eyes.
Yeah.
Because when they first come to us, the eyes are dead and they're dull.
Yeah.
And when you finally start to see them turn around, you see the sparkle begin to come back into the eyes. And I tell my staff, look in the eyes. Always look in the eyes. And it's amazing the transformation that can take place. You know, I had an opportunity years ago, and you talk about, you know, what do we need to do and how do we need to address this. And had an opportunity years ago to attend a session. The governor of the state of Maine, Jacques McKernan at the time, brought in a distinguished lecture series. And had an opportunity to attend one with Captain Kangaroo, Bob Keeshan, who was just an amazing, amazing man. And he made a comment that has stuck with me throughout my career. He said, you know, other societies tend to look at their children as assets. And in our country, we look at children as liabilities. Mm. We talk about the cost of education. Mm. We talk about what we need to do to make sure children make the right decisions, instead of talking about what do we do with children. So the conversation, you know, needs to change. The conversation needs to be about how do we work with children? How do we turn that attitude around so that children become an asset in our society versus a liability?
So what would you consider? I mean, I'll at the risk of exposing the fact that you've been around for a little while, you've worked with kids for 40 years. This is
right.
The second or third facility that you've run. How would you assess the state of children in the year 2012?
Well, I think we made some gains in some areas. Marcy mentioned early childhood, and I think there's been a lot more attention paid to early childhood, and I think we're going to see benefits as a result of that. I think we've made some gains in the area of health care for children. The number of children that have that now have health insurance has increased.
I was surprised that I think the rate of uninsured in the Lehigh Valley is only about 5.5% of kids, which really is actually good news.
It is a credit to the work that we've done and the work that we've done as a society to attend to those issues. But if you look at that, those are probably the only two areas that we're seeing better results in. I think there's a lot of places where we're not seeing the results. We're seeing an increase in a number of children who live in poverty. In 2000, there were 17% of the children in this country that lived in poverty. That number is now 21%.
Yeah.
That's about over a 3 million number increase.
You're listening. Let me take a quick. I say this every week. I'm such an amateur. I keep forgetting. I'm supposed to remind people what they're listening to. They're listening to WDIY. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I am your host. I'm Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are Greg Dowdy, the executive director of the Children's Home of Easton, and Marcy Ronald, the vice president for community impact for the Greater Lehigh Valley, for the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. So I got to keep remembering to do that, otherwise people aren't going to know that they're listening to NPR, and the local affiliate of NPR. Poverty. It pretty much is the starting point, I think, for most of the problems that we deal with. We run a homeless shelter. We also collect data for the homeless shelters. About 38 to 40% of all homeless people in the Lehigh Valley are children. And those are children of adults. If the adult is 16 years old, which isn't that unusual, that 16-year-old is not counted as a child in our shelter statistics because they're the head of the household. We don't count them as the child.
That's right.
The poverty rate in Allentown is in excess of 30% for the entire citizen population. For children, it's even higher. And one of the things that's most startling to me is the impact of place on a child's likelihood of being poor. Mm. In the Lehigh Valley, we have municipalities where the child poverty rate is barely 1%. Mm. And then we have cities of Bethlehem and Allentown and Easton where it is as much as 25 to 30 times higher. So that a child is 25 times more likely to be poor depending on where he or she lives. Now, there's something terribly wrong about that.
Right.
Do you ever think about, how do you deal with the issue of place when it comes to, children's poverty?
Well, I think you have to deal with not just the children's issues, but also the issues of the parents of those children. We need to attend to both generations there because the stress that has been placed on the adults and the parents of these children, even not just homeless children, but children in stressed households because of the mortgage crisis, because of the economic situation, the jobless rate, that stress has increased on those families, and therefore that stress has been transferred down to the children as well, creating a lot of these issues. So we need to attend to both the children and their families and make sure that we're placing supports and doing the things that are necessary to help them come out of those downward spirals.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm Alan Jennings, your host. Tonight we are talking about an incredibly depressing issue, which is the our society's apparent unwillingness to really face the issues that our children face every day in our society. It's very upsetting. Greg Dowdy is my guest from the Children's Home of Easton, Marcy Ronald from the Greater Lehigh Valley, in the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. Stay with us.
All right. One, two, three, four. Well, this is all you kids out there that hate your mom and pop forcing you to eat everything that's on your dinner plate every night. Yeah, when I was a little kid, see, I never liked to eat. And mama'd put things on my plate and I'd dump them on her feet. But then one day she made this soup, I ate it all in bed. I asked her what she put in it and, well, this is what she said. Oh, chicken lips and lizard hips and alligator eyes. Yeah, monkey legs and buzzard eggs and salamander thighs. Yeah, rabbit ears and camel rears and tasty toenail pies. Stir them all together and it's mama's soup surprise.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
Country feet, is there a calling? Me and brother, I'm feeling fine. Wanna cut loose from the city, get out and run around. Country feet is moving in my feet and dancing in the hot sunshine. I'm gonna spread that country feet and all around the town.
Thanks for staying with us. You're probably wondering about the music tonight. Used to my playing various music to make the point of each segment of the show. But I thought tonight I would use what I think is just a remarkable album. It's called For Our Children. It was produced as a fundraiser for the Pediatric AIDS Foundation in the early 1990s. And so far, just now, that was Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. Prior to that, the greatest class-conscious rock and roller of our time, in my opinion, as Bruce Springsteen. And we started out the show with Ziggy Marley, from the son of Bob Marley. I got an email today from a parent talking about how hard it is for her to send her kids to college, and you know, wanting to make sure that we talked about that issue. But I mean, you know, education in general is a real issue, and I don't even know how we get our arms around it. I mean, it starts with people not apparently being willing to pay for it, but wanting the best they could get. And it used to be that education, you know, graduating from high school meant you were playing by the rules and it would open up opportunities. But 2/3 of the families that come into our homeless shelter are headed by working adults with a high school degree, the equivalent or better. Actually, 67% have high school degrees, the equivalent or better. 30% are employed people. So, you know, kids are graduating from college with mortgages, essentially, in college debt. Still not necessarily terrifically employable. 25% of people in their 20s are unemployed. The educational system, I don't know how much you have to say about this issue, but Marcy, you said that a substantial amount of the United Way's money is going to education.
Yeah.
What kind of ability do you have to judge whether there's a difference being made there?
Huh. Well, what we have found to be very helpful is to have a really clear sense of measures that we're tracking over a period of time. And so, for example, in early childhood education, being really clear about what it is that we're trying to change. So one of the things that we know that can make a difference in school readiness is improving developmental assets for kids. So making sure that kids are meeting, not developmental benchmarks, so making sure that kids are meeting their developmental benchmarks from birth to five. So if we're funding programs that are designed to improve that and we're tracking those measures over a period of time, we can begin to see a difference with those kids. And so when you ask the question, I mean, how do you eat an elephant? You have to take it a bite at a time. and you know, by all standards, you know, something as complex as the education system and how you possibly create some kind of change within that, with limited resources, you have to be really specific and targeted in how you invest in programs and services that are designed to create change. So you look at high quality things with really good measures, and then you track those measures over time. So we want to know, of the, 1,300 kids that we're investing in this year, how many of them hit their developmental benchmarks? And are they any better off? And then what kids are on the growth on the growth model towards meeting those things. So you know, you're asking a question, whether it's early childhood education or other things, we have to be really, really specific about what it is we're trying to accomplish, and making sure that it's lined up with what our education friends are trying to accomplish.
I think one of the things that has to change in education, one of the changes, unfortunately, I've seen over the 40 years that I've been involved, I think the discourse has changed from children to the adults in the education system. If you listen to the conversation that's taking place around education right now, it's about are the cost of education, and that cost being driven by salaries, that cost being driven by the pension system, that cost being driven by health insurance factors, and teachers unions and so forth. And this isn't a comment or anything against them, because I think they're very hard workers and they're entitled to those things. But the discourse has been about the adults in the education system, not the children. And I think part of that, and this is a whole another conversation I'd be glad to come back and talk with you about sometime, goes back to No Child Left Behind. And I think there's been a loss of focus. And I say that because the discussion should be about what children are learning and how they're learning, just as you mentioned. What are the assets, the developmental assets that they have in the early childhood? It should be about what they're learning, how they're learning it. Let instruction drive what's going on in schools. And I'm not sure instruction is driving what's going on in schools right now. I think assessment is driving what's going on in schools.
Yeah, and you know, here's my here's just one of the things that makes my life challenging, and that is that, you know, we talk about the inequity in how we fund public schools a lot, but David Rusk, who's kind of the guru who has written on regional governance and issues, especially as it relates to the health and vitality of cities, has pointed out that it's not that the issue of equity in education is not so much the amount of money we spend per child, but it's the concentration of poverty.
Yes.
And you cannot put all the poor kids in one place and expect the peer pressure to be to succeed. The peer pressure will be to fail, not to succeed. You know, if it were me, I'd break up Allentown School District and I'd parcel it out to the, you know, to the surrounding school districts, because, you know, it's not a sustainable model. And, you know, I don't want to say, you know, to Marcy, the last thing in the world I want to do is tell you that we shouldn't be putting the kind of money you are into early childhood education. But if they have no choice but to be in a place where everybody else around them is struggling with all kinds of pressures, most important of which is poverty, that's a tough thing to escape.
It really is. And you know, I have to believe that education is the door that will open opportunity for our children. And to pursue that education and to value that education, we really need to continue to promote that. So I think education is vitally important to our future. It's vitally important to the future of children. I do think we need to assess what it is we're doing in education.
I just want to add something on this. You know, to a couple things that coming to my mind. First, you know, I'm a parent in the Allentown School District, and I have, you know, two kids, and it amazes me how, with the resources that my child's school has, that band of hoodlums shows up every day and takes care of kids, and they do it with excellence. They do it in an amazing way. And so I guess... But what the for me, what the game change is that I think for so long it's been that the education system has been focused on how do we make sure that the educators are held more accountable and doing more, and we're putting more pressure on the education system. The reality is the education of our children, as trite as it sounds, is a community responsibility.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we know that the single path out of poverty is education. And so and moving kids along the continuum of education, not just that high school graduation, but prepared for life. And how can we do that when we have resources that are so limited? And so as a community, we have to share that responsibility. We know that one of the most significant predictors for school life success is whether kids are reading by the end of third grade. And the reality is that is not just the education system's responsibility. And so as a community, we have to share that. And so, I just feel really strongly about those things.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio, and I am the host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, Greg Dowdy, the executive director of the Children's Home of Easton, Marcy Ronald, the vice president for community impact of the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. And over there, the guy who makes no noise but makes sure the noise of this show gets done right, and that's Ray Schwab, who is a volunteer. I think you're a 20-something in that group of that we were talking about earlier, Ray.
That's right, 25.
25. God bless you. thanks. And you know, they say that kids these days, you know, but man, you're here every Thursday night that I'm here, and I appreciate you doing the show and all those gadgets that I would surely screw up. Let's from here go on to the thing that you know, I think is really the most disturbing. And Jerry Sandusky has you know, I mean, has his name become a verb yet? The abuse of children in our society and the breakdown of institutions that you would think are there to protect them is really disturbing. And I don't want to, you know, bum our audience out too much, but the reality is this is really serious stuff, especially when you look at the numbers of you know, how likely an abused child is to go on to abuse other children. Greg, I'm guessing that you're seeing kids in your in the children's home who have been through this.
We deal with abuse all the time, and it's not just the sexual abuse. You know, Jerry Sandusky and what he did was, you know, just abhorrent and criminal, you know, that brought the whole issue into the focus and forefront in the public discourse over the last year. It's not just sexual abuse. It's neglect. It's physical abuse. Mm-hmm. It's emotional abuse. Mm-hmm. And those things are all happening to kids all of the time. There are 2 million cases per year of reported abuse of children in this country. 2 million. Now, think about that. Mm-hmm. We've got 50 states. You know, if you spread that out across the 50 states and do the math, that's an incredible number.
Well, here we go. In Lehigh County in 2010, according to the Pennsylvania Department of Public Welfare, there were 826 reports of suspected child abuse, 85 of which were substantiated. Northampton County had 718 reports, 131 substantiated. You know, that's scary stuff. They spent between the two counties, they spent about $5 million just on those investigations, not the protection. I mean, yeah. It's the investigation part. Then they need to be protected, and they need to be protected in places like the Children's Home of Easton. God bless the folks up at Kids Peace. How is the system being funded these days?
It's a challenge. It's a constant challenge, and it's a challenge all nonprofits are facing, but especially the area of providing care to children. You know, there's federal dollars that flow through the state and state money that flows to the counties, and the counties are able to enter into contracts with providers like the Children's Home of Easton, Kids Peace, and Valley Youth House that you mentioned earlier to pay for those services. But unfortunately, the dollars aren't there to cover all of the needs. Even the children who are not receiving care, you know, the ones who are receiving care, the full cost of care is not being met. One of the things that we are trying to do through the Pennsylvania Council of Children, Youth, and Family Services, we asked, and on our behalf, legislation's been introduced in the last two sessions, and it will be introduced again in the next session, to amend Act 30. Now, Act 30, without boring your listeners and so forth, but Act 30
is... By the way, our listeners are really smart.
That's
people,
great. Go
ahead.
Well,
they don't get bored easily.
I hope they hear this, and this is something that I think we really need to pay attention to. Act 30 is the needs-based budgeting law. And the way the needs-based budgeting law should work is that the whole concept was that the counties and the local municipalities would put together what their needs were. And they would estimate the cost of those needs. That information would be transferred to the Department of Public Welfare, who would build that into the budget as best they could. And that would be presented to the legislature through the governor. And then the legislature would do everything they need to do to make decisions around the budget. Unfortunately, what's happened with the needs-based budgeting process, it's actually working just the opposite. There's targets being set at the top. That's been relayed to the department. The department is relaying that to the counties. The counties are building their budgets around that. What we've introduced is legislation that would get back to the principle of the needs-based budgeting process. Tip O'Neill once said that all politics are local. And, Marcy, you mentioned that it's a local community's responsibilities to attend to what's going on in school. I think communities and the local efforts and the local advocacy efforts needs to be what begins to turn this problem around. Mm-hmm. That we need to attend to and raise our voice for children, raise our voice for families who are homeless, raise our voice for families who are in trouble because of joblessness, and make ourselves heard with our local legislators, because they're pretty receptive people. And they will take that information, and they will use that information as they deliberate in Harrisburg and then on to Washington to make the decisions. You know, the beauty of our democracy is that it's about us. And we can make a difference, and we can advocate, and we can be that strong voice for those in our society who don't have the voice. Mm-hmm. And that's the children and the elderly especially.
Well put, Greg. Marcy, is the United Way funding any child abuse intervention kinds of things and services?
It hasn't been, not directly. We do provide funding to two organizations in the Lehigh Valley that provide support for victims of violence, which include children. Mm-hmm. But we have not, more significant emphasis of our dollars has been on prevention rather than intervention. And for our organization, fairly new for us, many United Ways used to be sort of Switzerland on these particular issues. But
Switzerland meaning not
neutral.
Aligned. Neutral.
Or just really good chocolate. but we used to be, sort of more neutral on public policy issues and looking at these things. But our organization has joined many other United Ways around the country that are beginning to either serve as a voice or as a convener for folks to work together on specific public policy issues, but also to take a position. And so we took a position on the state budget this past year, and we're really concerned about the impact of the state budget. And so I think that's fairly new for us. But when we see, reductions in funding and, talking with our friends at Children and Youth in both counties and knowing, the triage situation that many of them are under, trying to manage it with the resources that they have, and then you have, funding cuts happening at the state and federal level for those exact types of services and support that are needed for kids, it's really concerning from an organizational perspective for us.
You're listening to listener-supported community public radio. This is WDIY. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, Greg Dowdy from the Children's Home of Easton and Marcy Ronald from the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. We're talking about kids, and I hope you'll stick around. We're going to take a quick break.
There's a little spider. So strong, listen to the beat, Richard Puck, the song.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side, opening their 32nd season with The Pan Show, In Pan We Trust. The favorite horned god is back and leading a ragtag coalition of nations to save America from itself. Performed by the Touchstone Ensemble, this political satire musical will run from October 4th through the 13th. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Beatles said it, love is all you need. That was Carole King. Anybody in our generation, Greg, perhaps not the youngster over there.
But well, see, we'll explain who she was.
recognize that one. This album is really terrific stuff. I had the honor when I was at the inauguration a few years ago, sitting next to the woman who ran the Pediatric AIDS Foundation when the CD was out. I felt like she was sort of a... but then I also ran into James Taylor, who's on the CD, and Tom Hanks, which was pretty cool.
I think he's a name drop.
I'm showing off.
Someday he'll be talking about, you know, running into Greg and Marcy.
Yeah, he interviewed us.
it's just a break from...
Maybe just you, Greg.
It's just a break from the misery of the subject. Let's talk about the budget issues, Greg. You've got to pay your bills,
mm-hmm.
So you've got more kids in need. You've got more compelling need, more serious need, and we don't have the resources we once did. How are you doing paying your bills?
Well, you know, one of the fortunate things and one of the things I found when I came to the Lehigh Valley was an incredibly supportive community.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, the Children's Home has been very fortunate to have had some wonderful supporters. And we have a fundraiser, in fact, coming up next month, which has just been, you know, going off the charts. You know, that's helped tremendously. We've also were fortunate to have people had the foresight to start funds, so we had some reserves that we could draw on. But that's becoming more and more difficult, it's becoming more and more of a challenge because costs continue to go up. You know, we have not seen a rate increase in over 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Our costs have continued to go up.
Sure. So what do you do? Do you cut services? Do you not give pay raises?
You do things and you begin to look at the way you're doing things. There are fewer kids coming into care. That's been an issue for us. You look at ways that you can do things more effectively, more efficiently, and which in some ways everybody should do, and we've been forced to do that as well.
But see, the problem is that the system gets ridiculed mm-hmm. for its, you know, the troika, the waste, fraud, and abuse. It's like one word, waste, fraud, and abuse.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so they cut us, and we keep finding ways to continue to provide. And all we're doing is almost reinforcing, you know, that perspective when you know, people don't give us the credit for finding better and better, cheaper and cheaper ways of cutting the costs of serving these situations.
Well, there's clearly an attitude that nonprofits will continue to do this work, and you look at what's happened with all these cuts, and you're absolutely right. We have continued to do it. The safety net for children and families and those less fortunate in our society is in bad shape. There are some huge holes.
Yeah.
And at some point, things are going to come crashing down. If the nonprofit sector, and I've been concerned for years, that if the nonprofit sector is not viewed as an important part of our economy,
mm-hmm.
along with the for-profit sector and the public sector, there's going to be a big problem. Because who's going to do that work? Who's going to pick up that load? And I fear for the nonprofit sector.
Mm. Marcy, I think a lot of people think that the private sector, and Greg, you said it, this is a very generous community. Our private contributions have not declined despite the economy. Mm. We're very proud of that, although many nonprofits report that they have. And so a lot of people who don't like government spending will make the argument that the private sector giving will make up for that. But Marcy, my impression is that there are very few United Way agencies, for example, that are funded exclusively by private funding, and even the majority of their funding is not private funding. Is that what you're finding?
I would agree with that. of our current 47 funded partner agencies right now, we saw over the last year 20 of them went through massive change, organizational change, funding issues, a variety of different things, you know, due to the loss of state and federal funding, due to the loss of, you know, just changes happening across across the community. And so, you know, just to your point, Greg, you know, being able to stabilize those organizations that provide vital services right. to our community is a really important part of what we need to be doing. And so, and those organizations that are that are doing it and doing it well. You know, I think it used to be there's sort of two perspectives on this, from at least the way that I've seen it, is that, you know, it used to be kind of the moral imperative, you know, that we would give because it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we need to give and to participate in that because of an economic imperative, because it makes good sense to our economy to give and to be part of the solution or part of the change. And I know that sounds a little Pollyanna, but the reality is that there are a lot of folks in this community who are incredibly generous and who are incredibly smart and who are focused on trying to find good solutions to these issues. And so, you know, back to your original question, I think there are some just masterful and incredibly hardworking partners, many of our partners and others who are outside of our system, who are cobbling together with what they have. You know, they're somehow stone souping it. You know, they're bringing right. a little of this and a little of that, and somehow still producing stew. And so, it's really remarkable. But the reality is, there are only so many wells in our community.
Right. That's so true, and you talk about the private sector and those individuals who step forward to help fill in. I hadn't thought it in terms of it is an economic force, it's really important that they continue to do that. I also think government needs to assess what it is doing and where dollars are going. Because you mentioned it, Alan, the buzzword is waste, fraud, and abuse. And there are people out there abusing the system. And there may be a few, but I don't think the dollars are out there that many of the politicians feel they are out there. It just is not the case.
Greg, you said that your numbers are down. Is that because kids are being directed away from the children's home approach to services, or what is? Is it because it's too expensive to do residential rehab, and they'd rather use foster parenting, and what's going on?
Part of it is that I think the move in the country is to support families in homes,
but why support children in homes. Parent? It's the worst thing has got to be your parent being the victimized. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. the perpetrator. I mean, mm-hmm. the person who is supposed to be your home, your love, source of love and upbringing and nurturing and all, and the parent turns mm-hmm. against you, abuses you, or neglects you. Why are we so intent on keeping kids in that environment? I don't understand the courts and the law and the system believing that keeping a kid in that environment is better than putting the kid in the children's home
or
any place else.
Yeah, I think for the most part, kids who are sexually abused, physically abused, where safety is a real concern, the people in county government who are responsible for oversight of that do a pretty good job of making mm-hmm. sure that kids are safe.
Yeah.
I think the larger issue comes in those situations where families are in stress. And kids are in stress as a result. It used to be that, you know, if there was a sense of neglect or children weren't getting what they need, that they would remove the child from the family and they would come to places like the Children's Home of Easton, where there would be a safe environment. I think the move now is let's work with those families. And in part, I agree with this. And as long as it is a safe environment and as long as people are making the effort, I think children should live with their families. My concern is that it's not always the case. This didn't happen in this state, and I want to make sure I make that clear, but in the state I worked in previously, I asked that question once of a state administrator, you know, how can you tell whether or not a family, you know, is in good shape to, you know, take a child back into the family? And the response was, if they're good enough. Well, what's that mean? Wow. What's yeah. good enough?
and
again, I want to make it clear, that wasn't in Pennsylvania.
I can't imagine having the weight of that decision on my shoulders,
yeah.
you know, of
yeah.
being able to, of being the person that has to say, okay, this child goes back to that environment. Because, I mean, we've seen this in some of our institutional abuses where right. you know, kids have been moved around knowing that they were, you know, they were going to be victimized wherever they went from there. Foster care, the statistics that I have is that 460 kids in Lehigh County and 561 kids in Northampton County are in foster care. Foster care is an expensive system.
Yes,
it is. Yet the people who do the foster parenting don't make, I mean, it's not a lucrative business.
No, it isn't. You have 400,000 children in foster care, out of home care in this country right now. And the federal government has asked states to set targets for reducing the number of kids in care, in out of home care. And that's part of what's been driving the field right now, is to get those numbers down. And Pennsylvania has reduced those numbers pretty significantly. Again, the question becomes, what is happening to those children who are remaining in homes? Are they tracking what is going on for them? Are they being successful by staying in their homes and staying with families? And are families, you know, caring enough? Are families in good enough condition to make sure that that child gets what they need? I'm not always sure that's the case. And we have had situations where children have been reunited, and the next thing you know, they're back in care, they're back in the system. And all of a sudden, that becomes our fault because it didn't work, evidently, because you didn't do a good enough job turning them around so they could go back home. I think it really needs to be about everybody coming together as a team, that being the families, the providers, the state and county caseworkers, to make sure that good decisions are being made for that child and include the child in those decisions.
You're listening to listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, Greg Dowdy from the Children's Home of Easton, Marcy Ronald from the United Way of the Greater Lehigh Valley. What I don't understand is, why, as a society, are we not paying more attention to kids? I mean, what is it about? I mean, are we failing in the messaging? Are we failing to get the point across? Are we failing to you know, is it because kids don't vote and seniors do? You know, what is it that a society as sophisticated, as modern, as contemporary as this one is, the United States of America, we're not paying more attention to kids as a matter of public policy? What is it?
I think it's our fault. I don't think we're asking tough questions.
Those of us in the system.
Those of us in the system, those of us in who are adults, who are responsible for holding public officials responsible for their decisions and for the funding and so forth. I think we need to be better advocates. We need to speak up more. I was just looking at some numbers this morning. The organization called the Voices for America's Children did a survey on the presidential debates. And, you know, they were Republican debates because obviously the Democrats already have their candidate.
Right.
And of 1,000 questions that were asked in those presidential debates, 17 were about children's issues. That's less than 2% of the questions being asked of our candidates are about children.
Mm. Why is that, Marcy? Do you have any?
My mind is going to solution. Not focusing
that
on the problem.
The next
question. You know, my mind is going to, you know, how do we define as a community what this, you know, how do we define what it is, you know, the state of the child in the Lehigh Valley, and how do we track that and get behind that and define what it is to take care of kids in our community? What does that mean, and how do we define, you know, a set of indicators that we track, but more importantly that we are developing solutions together? I wouldn't necessarily agree, especially on the local level. You know, in the state and federal, I think it's a little different, but on the local level, I think there are a lot of folks who care very deeply about these issues and who are working together. There are some business leaders that have an early learning investment commission. There are other folks who are looking at, you know, things like the Promised Neighborhood and other things where they're talking about how do we do place-based efforts that can address some of these issues and bring to light some of these issues. I think that, you know, if I'm just giving an opinion about you know, sort of where this gets lost in the shuffle. I think it's a lot of noise in our community about a lot of different issues. And mm-hmm. so the economy and, you know, jobs and a variety of different things. And I think they're getting lost in the shuffle. But the reality is, just as, you know, we have a significant stake in the ground in early childhood education and significant stake in the ground in this, you know, our position is very clear that this is a community responsibility. And so we should be doing more to raise the noise level for kids in our community.
Ray, get in here. I'm calling on Ray Schwab. He's becoming an expert on all these things because he sits here month after month listening to all kinds of experts talk. 25 years old. You're a voter?
Yes.
Have you missed an election since you turned 18?
No, I haven't.
You pay attention.
That's right.
So why do you think we're not paying attention to these issues? I mean, tons of people in your generation aren't even voting. What's going on there? Why aren't we getting people's attention on these things?
I'm not quite sure. I think a lot of it might have to do with some maybe very pressing economic issues. But as far as a young person would go, I feel like a lot of them are a little apathetic to those issues, and they don't really even know where to take the next step.
Mm. But your generation is the most tolerant on issues related to gays and gay lesbian issues. You're most tolerant on you understand environmental issues. You get these issues. You've been raised in a much more tolerant environment. We'd love to see your age group voting more. So what the heck are you doing, man? You're sitting here when you should be out there getting people registered to vote.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens in this election season. We'll see how many people will turn out. I mean, I'm sure there was a great turnout in 2008. We'll see what happens this year.
My bet will be that a lot of them won't be turning out anymore. Greg, parting shots?
No, I think the thing that I would like people to keep in their conscience is in their consciousness is that children are our future. You started by saying we say children are our future. That is a reality. They are the next generation. They are the people that are going to be taking care of us.
We're
not
in trouble.
Not too distant future, by the way, Alan. I think, you know, be a voice for a child. Be a voice for the needs of children. Be a voice for education. Be a voice for children who are abused. And any time that you have that opportunity to talk to decision makers and policy makers and bureaucrats and legislators, talk to them about the need to pay attention to these issues. Because I think that's the only way we're going to really bring attention to the problem is let's put it in our own consciousness.
Marcy, parting comment?
I was at a conference a few years ago, and one of the speakers was a young man from the West Coast who was talking about a youth development program and talking about the power of the program and the value of it. And I just remember one of his comments was, you know, I have to believe every day that I'm willing to put my personal last name on the back of that kid, mm-hmm. and that's my child, that's my name. And I think that, you know, we talk about these ideas and we consider them, but the reality is that child who's in the grocery store, that child who's, you know, who's the kid of the waitress who's serving you at the local restaurant, you know, that kid who is in your daughter's or your son's kindergarten class belongs to you too. And so how do we as a culture shift away from just thinking of me and mine and into thinking of we and ours?
Boy, well said.
My
well
guests tonight, Greg Dowdy from the Children's Home of Easton, Marcy Ronald from the United Way, the Greater Lehigh Valley. Next month, November 8th, I'll be joined by Representative Jennifer Mann, who will be in her last month as a state representative and has accumulated a considerable amount of wisdom over that time. We're going to talk to her about her departure, what she's leaving behind. Thanks for listening. I'm Alan Jennings. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, WDIY. I'm going to leave you with a weird Bob Dylan song.